To show you.
You got a little Hitchcock for you right here, Dingleberry.
Jesus Christ. Are we starting now?
That note, let's go. Sorry,
I didn't know you were recording. I'm fucking dying.
That's
a
freaking Jimmy Star. I think he's talking about his pants.
Much like Jimmy Stewart and Shia LaBeouf, I see everything. Let's go ahead and get started, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Phil Acevedo.
Hey, well, hello there. It's Big Arms Acevedo, as I like to call myself.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, it's the worst.
All right, guys. We are talking about it's been a long time since we visited this one director. We are talking about Rear Window. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. We are closing out September with, of course, the Master of the Macabre. And I'm very excited to talk about it. Phil, take it away.
Yes, absolutely. So, Rear Window. Here is the IMDb synopsis. A photographer in a wheelchair spies on his neighbors from his Greenwich Village courtyard apartment window.
Greenwich.
Oh, my God.
It's New York shit. Don't worry about it. New York shit.
Greenwich Village courtyard apartment window. And becomes convinced one of them has committed murder. Despite the skepticism of his fashion model girlfriend.
Murder.
Right.
Okay. We'll kick aside. It's more descriptive than the previous ones, but it's still basic. It's a long movie.
I'd give it a 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely another AI one for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But
like how the girlfriend had to be like fashion model girlfriend.
Oh, fashion
doesn't
model,
that,
obviously.
Doesn't that, can't just say girlfriend.
No. She's a vapid bitch.
But actually, so this is the first description we're doing for IMDb. We are covering, technically, 4 movies and a TV show today.
What?
So, yeah, we're covering 4 and a TV show. Wait, is it 4? No, 3 in a TV show. 3 in a TV show. I'm tripping.
I was like, what the fuck else are we talking about?
I was like, is there something I didn't see?
No,
I was like,
oh, 3 in a TV show.
To be fair, I did miss the TV show.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
But, you know, they're all based in this one major one, so we're going to spend a lot of time on Rear Window. Mm-hmm. So take it away, Phil.
Beautiful. Rear Window. This is, of course, written by John Michael Hayes.
Well,
and I know. And it's directed by the one and only Alfredo Hitchcock.
Stop it.
Alfred Hitchcock. Let him have another coffee.
Alfred Hitchcock. I was playing with that one. Some guy named Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if you guys might have heard of him.
I don't know.
So anyways, this movie is starring James Stewart, also Jimmy to the uninitiated. You know, I call him Jimmy because, you know, we're on a first name. Yeah, we're on a first name basis, me and him. You know, we're cool.
Grandpa Jim. Yep.
Yeah. Grace Kelly, Wendell Corey, Thelma Ritter, and Raymond Burr.
Hey, this is, it's got a lot of people in this movie. A lot of people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we're going to start with, essentially, this is where we're finding Hitchcock at his peak powers. Like, 100%. So, again, this episode's going to be a little different. As I say, we're exploring one of Hitchcock's most influential films, and some of the works that it actually influenced. So, of course, we're going to have some fun with this bitch. Rear Window is based on a short story called It Had to Be Murder by Cornell Woolrich. These people sounded so rich back in the day. Which features a story we've seen time and time again in media. But to summarize, it is, quote, a suspenseful tale about Hal Jeffries, a temporary disabled man who becomes obsessed with watching the lives of his urban neighbors. Seated in a chair by his rear window, Jeffries believes he has witnessed a murder.
Murder.
Murder. So at this point, the story is so well known that it's been adapted into many different high-profile movies and TV shows. Still, instead of adapting the book, each take actually gets direct inspiration from Hitchcock's first run of the story, starring James Stewart. So, hold on, I'm gonna drink water here. They mostly all draw from Rear Window instead of the actual short story itself. But this is Stewart's second collaboration with Hitchcock and further established him as a leading man, a status he was afraid he'd lose just a few years earlier, as actors like good old fucking Marlon Brando and James Dean were actually taking over the silver screen and leaving his entire generation behind. So Hitchcock, of course, had other plans for Mr. Stewart and helped reinvigorate his entire career with their very first collaboration, Rope.
God, I love Rope.
Yeah, Rope is awesome. Watched that one. Yeah, that's another banger right there.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, over the next few years, Stewart and Hitchcock's careers, they were actually only getting better. And most of the movies that you'll recognize from the director come from this particular era of his career, such as Dial M for Murder, Strangers on a Train, Vertigo, and of course his show Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He even managed to drop, during the time of this movie, 150 pounds from his peak weight and was at his most fit in his adult life.
Wow.
And yeah, so this was of course the happiest he'd ever been, saying to Francis Truffaut, "I was feeling very creative. The batteries were well charged."
I can hear him say that.
Yeah,
era, like, I mean, I've seen all these. Like, Dial M for Murder is so fucking cool. Strangers on a Train is of course a classic. Vertigo's fine.
Vertigo's fine. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it. Also, but yeah, he really was like, this is peak Hitchcock. He was never better at this era, I don't think. Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention that I also own Dial M for Murder as well.
Ooh.
Look at you,
little fucking... Yeah, I have a little Hitchcock collection right there. Yeah.
Of course you do. Fucking
you do have a little Hitchcock. You do have a little Hitchcock, you fight.
Stop it, dude. Stop it, dude. God.
Hitchcock,
I hate
rules.
That I don't have a comeback for that.
Anyways... The director was his. Listeners, this has been going on for 5 years. We just. They should be used to this by this point. The director was in his mid 50s during America's mid 50s, so he had a lot to say and used Woolrich's story to say it. Rear Window was planned extensively beforehand, being shot in a huge set on the Paramount lot that some of the actors actually lived in to stay in character and properly portray their day-to-day lives.
That's awesome.
Okay, can I actually say something right now?
Yeah.
The set design for this movie is maybe one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's fucking gargantuan. It's like elegant. It's fucking pristine, dude.
It just shows this like picturesque neighborhood where I'm just like, I want to like imagine all that natural light. Like everyone just has like these floor to ceiling windows. I mean, obviously like it's for like shooting purposes, but like just the thought of it, like everyone just having their windows open and just like it's fucking incredible. I kept like just like wanting to like pause and like look at all the details. It's like the like sets that they build in like Disneyland that are supposed to look like hyper realistic, and I just want to know whatever. Like, I just want to get all into the details. I fucking love it.
Well, what they ended up doing, I didn't put this in the outline, but they actually went and shot extensively different neighborhoods in Greenwich Village. So what they did is they put like this super cut of like what they think represents the area, and since it's all artificial, they actually had four different light settings too, to represent different points in the day as well. So, yeah, and each little apartment, even though it doesn't make sense in a layout sense, like, they were to represent each character's own personal life, so they were all to be drastically different.
God, I love it. So smart. Yeah.
It really is, and it took a lot of planning. But one of my favorite details, actually, is all the sound, too, was diegetic with the exception of the musical score in the beginning. So whatever you heard was happening within the neighborhood. Like, it was all sound that they just manufactured as part of the day-to-day life.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, nice. Of course, you know, and with this, just to cut ahead here, it was also, like many of the director's other films at the time, it was a gigantic success. Like, this shit was huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, however, for years, it would actually be considered lost. seeing as it had major rights issues that prevented many from seeing it for decades, with the re-release not occurring until the mid-80s, actually, which is just around the time when we began to see some major adaptations of Rear Window. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that in just a second, as each of these adaptations uses the template of the story and the themes in their own way. And, of course, in their own era. And they're very representative of the time they were released. So, now, hold on a second there. What is that template? And what are those motherfucking themes? Webster, please!
Hell yeah!
Please.
Let's
Please go. Help us here.
A peek outside and inside. So, Rear Window at its core features a number of themes that work together to drive the story forward. With the strongest of them, if you couldn't pick up on it already, is of course voyeurism.
Oh, I got a typo already, fuck.
Through professional photographer LB Jeffrey's observations, while recuperating from a broken leg, we get a peek at the private lives of his friends and neighbors, but also a potential murder mystery under the very noses of those going about their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So as the story progresses, themes such as community, obsession, loneliness, detachment, and introspection all work together to ultimately determine if what Jeffries is doing is even moral, despite the potential upside of solving a crime and saving a life. And of course, the downside being an incorrect life upending accusation, all while clearly invading someone's privacy. It's pretty suspenseful stuff from, of course, the master of suspense.
And all before the Patriot Act, you know?
Yeah, right.
I see this as Bush's favorite fucking movie. Mm-hmm.
While we're here, though, let's take a look at the voyeurism, which I think is, like, one of the most, like, Hitchcock loves playing with voyeurism.
Oh, absolutely.
It's, like, it's, it was most notably put front and center by the British film theorist motherfucking Laura Mulvey and her essay Visual Pleasure in the Narrative Cinema. I have read this thing so many fucking times.
That's why I gave it to you. That's why I gave it to you.
Love it.
I don't think she's responsible for coining the term, but she focuses on the male gaze, which is something we use, like, all the time now, like the male versus mm-hmm. female gaze, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how in cinema it allows men to actively look at passively female bodies. This act removes women from their agency and power, ultimately objectifying them and providing a spectacle for the male characters and the audience. Miss Torso is a prime example of this, and ultimately is concluded that Rear Window is a film about the male gaze. It gets deeper. So I'm just gonna keep going. Also, notably, like, Psycho is a great example if you want to look at, like voyeurism and, like, passively female bodies. Obviously, we have someone who is, like, an actual, like, you know, drilling holes in walls, like, passive creeper.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's also, I think, a great example if you want something that, like, will literally smack you across the head with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This is objectification!
Pay attention, motherfucker. John Fowell provides a different take, however, on the voyeuristic aspects of the film, stating, quote, Rear Window recognized that the darkest aspect of voyeurism is our desire for awful things to happen to people, to make ourselves feel better, and to relieve ourselves of the burden of examining our own lives, unquote. I enjoy this
motherfucker.
Take.
Yeah, that's good. But that hits the heart.
I mean, it's also,
sure.
I mean, it's playing on, like, the, what's the, Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Where just, like, taking pleasure in someone else's misery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hitchcock's adage also was, like, when I was... he tells other filmmakers for advice is, like, always torture the audience.
Yeah.
Always torture the audience, because that's what they like to see. You know?
James Stewart's character in the beginning, before he even witnesses a murder, like, he's, like, kind of watching, like, conflicts happen within his neighborhood. And he kind of, you can kind of tell he gets, like, kind of pleasure from it. I mean, it's the same way that, like, you know, people like to gossip. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. He gets a rise out of it, for sure. Yeah. He gets a rise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We like the cheese may.
You certainly do.
So, Miss Lonely Hearts is the most obvious representation of course, loneliness in the story. But a lot of characters exhibit it to some degree. Mrs. Torso doesn't make any sincere connections with her suitors until her boyfriend inevitably returns from war. And Jeffrey's own relationship with Lisa exhibits his innate feeling of loneliness and desire to maintain it. He can't commit to her, but he also can't let her go. at least for most of the film. That's kind of like the subplot of the whole thing. This film also comes in the post-war America of good old USA, where men returned to the workforce and women were confined to household work. The home itself had transformed as well in the 50s with storage to refrigerate food, so you're making less trips to the grocery store, washing machines making less trips to the laundromat, and consumer culture being front and center now for that good old white America was swimming in post-war jobs and money. Jeffrey, go ahead.
This is definitely a white person America for sure.
Yeah, because
our Vato ass, my relative did not have this. Definitely no. But still, God. You know, it is what was part of pop culture at the time, and you can tell, like, Jeffrey's, you know, takes throughout the thing are very just like, look at this like auto thing and blah blah blah. Like, he's being an old man right here.
Well, there's this line where Lisa like implies that he lives in a bad neighborhood. I'm like, that's fucking Greenwich Village.
Yeah. Oh, that's
funny. Oh man.
So Jeffries gets a chance to see these individuals who are spending more time at home than ever and spending their dollars on more things and experiences than ever, while also having to be taken care of. It's pretty emasculating for a globe-trotting photographer who's in a domain he's unfamiliar with, his own home. Each adaptation of the story has its own take on its time period and themes that are reflective of its era and message. So let's see what they have to say, starting with another auteur director and the good old 1980s.
Yeah.
Phil?
Yes. Phil gets this one. Absolutely. I cannot wait to read this part. The title says Peak De Palma, as in my boy Brian De Palma. Man, that's okay, right. Here we go. I know that man really loves his Hitchcock, and every time I say Hitchcock, I don't know, it just sounds weird. He's a fan of Alfred Hitchcock. There you go.
There you go.
He likes that Hitchcock.
Yes.
He can't get enough of that Hitchcock.
Stop it, guys. Stop it. Oh my God!
All right, Hitchcock is his favorite Hitchcock.
Stop it!
He gets really deep into Hitchcock.
Oh my God! Okay, can I please start?
Sure.
The first adaptation of Rear Window, which interestingly enough was released after the film was put back into theaters, is Brian De Palma's body double. My God! Mm-hmm. So I recently watched Body Double for the first time. When was this your first time also watching it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah, dude, this movie fucking rules. Webster, have you seen Body Double?
I have not seen Body Double.
It is incredible. It is Hitchcock all day, dude, for sure. I think it came out like in early 80s. I want to say like 83, 84 or something like that.
84.
Yeah, it was like a year after he did Scarface. So, all right, IMDb synopsis for Body Double is a young actor's obsession with spying on a beautiful woman who lives nearby leads to a baffling series of events with drastic consequences. I actually like this IMDb synopsis.
Right, this actually is not bad, because there is a lot of mystery here, so you're going to have to be a little inconspicuous with the description, but yeah, this is actually not a bad one.
It's not too specific like the Rear Windows. So Body Double is the erotic thriller take on Rear Window, though it's not limited to that single movie. The story itself actually contains ideas from three major Hitchcock films: Rear Window, Vertigo, and Dial M for Murder. I definitely see that. Yeah, for sure. With Body Double, I definitely see those three movies in there for sure.
Man, this is like, it makes me want to watch it.
It's good. It fucks, dude. This movie rules.
Very 80s.
Super 80s, and it's got that Brian De Palma-ness. Like, he's a big Hitchcock fan, so like, you see the homages for sure, and the camera work, and the music, and a lot of the suspense, for sure. So, Body Double followed a streak of hits from De Palma, which were Dressed to Kill, another banger, Blowout, a major banger. That's a big De Palma banger. And, of course, one of my personal favorite movies of all time, Scarface. Gina, don't go. So, anyways, this film mixes
Tony Montana and Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window.
Oh,
there you go.
No.
Oh, my God. All right, so Jimmy Stewart as Tony Montana is like, now, Gina, you got to put the gun down, okay? Because
God damn it.
Jimmy Stewart to Sosa, You know, so all I've got in this world is my word and my balls, and I don't break any of them for anybody, especially you, Sonny Jim.
To Michelle Pfeiffer, you have this look like you haven't been fucked in a year.
Or when the famous line, "Say hello to my little friend." I gotta say, say hello to my little friend.
Say hello to my little friend.
I'm not gonna do it there. They're kids, man. There's kids in there.
We can keep going with the Jimmy Stewart as all right, I don't fuck with AI, but we gotta get these AI artists to do Jimmy Stewart as Scarface now.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right, let's keep going. Yeah, oh no. God. Oh, I lost my place. you see what happens?
The story,
body double quality streak, right? No.
Yeah,
Scarface
is the last word.
All right, this film mixes Hitchcock and Hollywood, which makes it a unique take compared to other adaptations. Mm-hmm. And of course, the protagonist isn't stuck in one location, and the voyeuristic aspects of the film are mostly in the first half, with the second half focused on solving the murder mystery that's central to the film. And this film is, of course, a meta-satire on Hollywood and juxtaposes the movie industry along with the porn industry, showing little distinction between how each operates.
Ooh.
Very interesting. So, yeah, like, Webster, if there's no other reason why you should check out Body Double, that's it right there. So, yeah.
I like how that just makes me sound like an absolute degenerate, where it's just like, it's about the porn industry, watch it. To be fair, that is how you got me to watch Boogie Nights, so.
It's a great movie. Boom. It's a great movie.
Boom. Yeah, Body Double rules, dude. Have you seen Blowout with John Travolta?
No, I haven't seen that. That's I want to watch that one,
that's,
too.
That's I have it on Criterion. I'll let you borrow it. It's so fucking
hell yeah.
Good. It's good.
And as long as you borrow it and watch it within a reasonable time frame, or else he's gonna be on your ass.
You, Webster. How long have you had My Lost Highway
it's
now?
It's been 3 months, okay?
5 years.
It
feels like 5 years, so we're gonna go with 5 years.
Fine.
Wait, Blowout is set in Philadelphia, right?
No, I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. The film industry in Philly. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was about to say, his movie streaks, they were all centralized in different cities. There was New York, Philadelphia, and the Scarface of Miami, and then Miami. Body Double was LA. Mm-hmm. So the problem was up and down. Ooh, U.S. culture, hey, for this era.
Oh, wow. That's insane. Good call out there. I never noticed that. Hey, good stuff there.
I almost wrote that in, but I thought I used it as a comment.
All right. So De Palma's film also adds exhibitionism to the voyeurism themes pulled from Rear Window. Critic David Denby notes, quote, "Body Double is about Los Angeles, about the eroticized way of life, partly created by the media culture, in which exhibitionist and voyeur are linked by common need. The people live in houses with huge windows. They cruise one another insolently, unafraid of being watched as they watch. Privacy is meaningless. There is only the sexiness of endless scrutiny and quick encounter."
That does sound kind of hot.
Yeah,
it's a good take. It's a very good take.
That's a very good take. Yeah, it actually is kind of hot. Yeah. Objectification and the male gaze are played to the extreme in Body Double, with Jake's stalking of Gloria manifesting fantasies for the protagonist that are not grounded in reality. There is this beautiful, beautiful shot in Body Double where Jake is totally fantasizing that he's making out with a woman. I don't know if you remember this, Winter, but it's like the camera arcs around the two actors. So like the wind's blowing, beautiful beach. It's like
fucking violins and shit in the back.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. His view of her is firmly established before even meeting her or knowing anything about her personality or personally. My bad. This wasn't a big success critically or commercially, but seeing as it was made in the middle of De Palma's prime, he would inevitably get past it and continue to thrive in Hollywood till the mid-90s, which is right around where our next adaptation is set.
Before we go into that, I'm really interested in Body Double. I'm probably going to watch it. Thanks, guys. But the idea of someone, like, firmly developing like feelings for someone without ever actually having mm-hmm. met them, I feel like is also super relevant today with like parasocial relationships with like celebrities and like influencers.
Ooh, good. Point.
Where it's like people like feel like they know, like they know people on the internet like really, really well because they're, you know, people put their lives on the internet. But also at the same time having this romanticized idea of what they're like because you're only getting one facet of someone.
Yeah, it's easy to create fixations because they are just yours.
Yeah.
And you're getting the same information as everybody else. So, you know, there's also that need to, like, want to be right and have it be our own thing. Like, we're in the age of fandom right now. So this is it, taken to the extreme. It's terrifying stuff.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, people who, I mean, this happened a lot when I was, like, a teenager before, like, people had fully functioning, like, brains, right? Where it's, like, people have a hard time separating like the actor from the character they play, which happened a lot in fandom where like people would want like expect like Supernatural, for example. Jensen Ackles is not like that in real life.
Mm-hmm. And the kid that played Joffrey's not torturing people, okay,
right.
guys?
Like,
he's a good kid.
Yeah,
he's good seed.
But, he's in Batman Begins.
Oh,
yeah.
That's true. But yeah, just like that kind of concept of having like parasocial relationships, and this is that taken to an extreme, obviously. But yeah.
Oh, you're gonna have a lovely time in discussion then. I think you are. You're actually gonna have a great time.
Also,
with that,
so I believe Body Double may still be on HBO Max. So
nope, right now I had to pay for it.
Oh no way! Did it get removed? Because that's where I saw it.
It got fucking removed, buddy.
I saw it earlier this year. I saw it back in like February or March. Me and Savannah did.
I think like literally it. End of August.
They cut it. Wow.
Because it's September now.
Also, speaking of things that got removed at the end of August, Over the Garden Wall was taken off of Max, but it is on Hulu. So they just switched streaming services.
Still a place to watch.
As long as I can still watch it for spooky season, I am happy.
There you go. Is Rare Window in any streaming services right now?
Nope. Also had to pay for it.
Paid for Disturbia. And Rear Window.
Yep, and I spent a lot of money on movies yesterday.
Anyway, damn. Anthony, sorry.
Yes, it's all good because again, we're going to the mid 90s, baby, and we're at peak Simpsons. So, the 90s brought on actually a full remake of Rear Window that was very critically panned and ultimately forgettable. So, we're not going to bother with it.
This is
not
the Christopher Reeves one, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely it. Yes. Yeah. Thankfully, it wasn't the only adaptation of Rear Window in the 90s, and this one that we're going to talk about is actually much shorter. The Simpsons season 6 premiere, Bart of Darkness. Yes. This one has its own IMDb as well. IMDb synopsis reads, confined to his room with a broken leg, Bart suspects Ned Flanders of murdering Maude. His family's new swimming pool earns Lisa popularity among the neighborhood kids. Yes.
I love Lisa for this and this one. Lisa was like great. Having the time of her life. The discussion that she has with her brain.
Right?
Oh, yeah, this is a good episode. I remember watching this as a kid.
Such a good one.
Revisiting this episode was really good too.
Right. Oh, what? I had a typo there. That's fine. Anyways, the episode takes the story, I know, right? Takes the story and does it in a very mid-90s way. It's actually full of parody and meta-commentary. It's telling that Flanders would be the murder suspect in this version, seeing as the Simpsons have routinely made fun of religion through its early seasons. Showcasing how such figures are hiding a dark secret, or are extremely judgmental. Either way, Model Citizen Flanders has been the most pure to this point in the show, compared to others like, of course, Reverend Lovejoy, who's kind of a dog sometimes, and his wife, too. So it's definitely played against fan expectations, but wasn't able to completely rule him out either, you know, considering the tone of the show. So what also solidifies it of its era... Oh, it wasn't a typo. I fucked it up. Is the focus on consumer culture, particularly the pool shopping scene, where salesmanship and everything needing to be more and bigger are front and center, which is, it's a very funny scene. How it's just
I love
that.
I
can do this.
I love that. Yeah, very, very good theme right there, Flan. I love that.
Thanks.
It's so true.
Right? It's very 90s, too, like the way it's all sold to them. But this tale does involve children. So their main problems are... much less lofty in scale than in other adaptations. Popularity and the fakeness surrounding it are major themes, and it's ultimately shown how its pursuit can lead to harm, with Bart attempting to impress his new friends with a stunt gone wrong, and Martin looking to become the most popular by pushing the limits of his own pool and losing everything when it breaks with everyone inside of it. earlier in the, which is a great scene. Of course, earlier in the episode, Lisa's status is usurped when consumer culture gets the better of the Simpson clan, and the kids find a much more impressive pool from Martin, but exploit it as they think he's an even bigger pushover than Lisa. So yeah, these kids are all at each other's throats. It's a very interesting take on the story. And of course, it wouldn't be the Simpsons without, or 90s sitcom in general, without being very, very overly self-referential. Having James Stewart's character from Rear Window being an actual, if briefly seen, character in the episode, outraged as he spies on the citizens of Springfield.
That's and fucking hilarious.
It's
That's
hilarious.
You know, when I watched that as a kid, I didn't understand that. But, like, watching it, like, you know, I watched this episode maybe a few years ago, probably like five or six years ago. For the first time since being a kid. And I was like, oh, shit, wow, they legit threw in Jimmy Stewart in like, in a broken leg cast and a wheelchair.
Yeah, and, with the same outfit, everything.
Yeah, he had the same outfit in the movie. I was like, oh, wow, there it is. I
thought he's like, cool. Oh, God, what are they doing over there?
I thought that was so cool. As a kid, you would not know what the fuck that is, but yeah.
Right, but as a Hitchcock fan, you're like, they're just letting you know exactly what they're doing, but they're doing it brilliantly. Yep, it's the Simpsons. Again, this was peak Simpsons. They knew they were fucking with you. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is the mid-90s adaptation is one of the more popular versions of Rear Window, actually. But the most popular one raises the characters' ages to teenage status and takes us to the good old 2000s, baby!
Fuck yeah! Cue System of a Down sequence.
Such a lonely day, and it's mine.
Where's my Xbox Live?
I know. With this fucking PSP, did you spot that?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
and my Gen 1 iTunes account.
Oh, I know.
That you took my iTunes and blah, blah. Oh, my God. Oh, this is great.
That's 600 gigs of my life. Shut up.
60 gigs.
Oh, yeah.
60,
it was 60 gigs, yeah. Which was probably the premium version of the device for sure.
I remember 60 gigs of music back then. I was like, oh, fuck, dude, you have like albums and albums in there.
You got like everything.
Mm-hmm. How could you ever listen to all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Bitch, I got Spotify now. So, let's dive into peak LaBeouf, shall we?
Yeah.
So, mixing the 2000s remake surge with young adult mystery is, needless to say, a bold move. But director DJ Caruso and star Shia LaBeouf managed to make one of the most critically and financially successful versions of the story, even though legally it had to be different enough to not fall into total ripoff territory.
Yeah.
Rights issues just seemed to follow this one. Anyway, let's see what IMDb has to say about Disturbia. Quote, a teen living under house arrest becomes convinced his neighbor is a serial killer. Unquote. That's the movie. That is the movie.
That is literally the movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I gotta say, for simplicity, that's a pretty good. I'm going like a 9 out of 10 with IMDb synopsis for
that
one.
7.
Yeah, nothing about iTunes in there, but I'll give it an 8.
Oh, that's fine. It doesn't say anything about Trinity.
Right.
So, this movie brings the story of Rear Window to the digital age, even if it wasn't quite as digital as we're used to now. Internet sleuthing is front and center. The use of cell phones and texting moves the plot along and is clearly integrated into some of the more suspenseful scenes. Mm-hmm. And the teens actually act like teens, with LaBeouf's character being put under house arrest after lashing out, though understandably so, considering the tragic event in the opening of the film. Mm-hmm. I completely forgot that scene existed.
Bro, like, I remember we watched it in theaters, and we were just like, oh, this is like, oh, this is cool, Shadow Blood Kid, whatever, and then it's like, the whole energy was sucked out of the fucking theater when it went down.
Fucking tense, because also, like, they fake you out, they make you think everyone's okay, and then they're so not okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I had never seen Disturbia up until last night for this episode, and when the opening scene that you guys were talking about, the car accident scene, I was like, oh, so this is probably where he breaks his leg. Because I didn't know he was, like, under house arrest or anything like that.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay, this is where he breaks his leg and he's in a wheelchair then. Like Rear Window, right? And then I was like, oh, no, this this is like a year later. A year later, he's under house arrest.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Get it. No, play I was like, totally.
Expectations. Yeah. That's good,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It really did. Yeah, it did.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that this movie did that I absolutely fucking loved and immediately identified as an early 2000s trope is there's a girl next door aspect to the film, which was obviously mm-hmm. like very, very popular in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. thanks to films so cleverly named The Girl Next Door and a number of other teen comedies.
Very underrated Emil Hirsch film right there.
The Girl Next Door?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was actually lucky enough to be a teenager in the early 2000s who had a hot neighbor and we used to make out and stuff.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Yeah, it was cool. Wow. It was really good. Next door neighbor, too.
And then she moved away and feels like such a lonely yeah. day.
I was like 13, but me and a neighbor, she was like a year older than me. I think she was like 14 or something like that. And yeah, we used to just, yeah, she used to, but wow, I was terrible as a teenager. When she moved, the old lady next to us had a granddaughter who started visiting a lot, who also happened to be my age, who also we ended up going and making out in the backyard instead
of
in
my garage. Look at this fucking guy.
Some people get all the fucking luck, man.
I got lucky as a I had two, not one, but two next door neighbors.
He's like, I and like, I was yeah, so yeah. sad for 5 yeah. minutes because then I looked over to the right.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have like I lived in a cul-de-sac too, and yeah. it was really cool. It was
that's nice. Fucking wild. Yeah. I had this weird thing in my head where like when I was like a kid, I always like was like projecting on like older age groups. So when I was like 10, 11, 12, I was like, oh man, it's gonna be so like, I can't wait to be in high school. Or then when I was in high school, mm-hmm. I was like, I can't wait to be in college. Like I always projected mm-hmm. on like next age gap, like yeah. age.
Because it's gotta get better, right?
It's gotta get fucking better. It never did.
I'm 40.
No. And I remember seeing movies like this in the early 2000s. I'm like, what's that like to be a teenager and like making out with your next door neighbor? And, like, I was inside. I never left my house.
first time ever making out with a girl was also not my next door neighbor, but a neighbor across from me.
You told us this fucking story.
Spin the bottle. Yeah, play spin the bottle.
Yeah, we get it, Phil. We're going to just talk about your conquests in the early 2000s.
I was a 13-year-old whore.
I was going to say, you were a very slutty 13-year-old.
You goddamn whore.
Man. So, Disturbia did getting back on track, please. It did the horror remake thing where it ups the gore and darkness of the original film, though it does have enough comedy throughout to make it less of a dreary affair, like a lot of the more generic remakes of the time would do.
Mm-hmm.
This film, it's also conveniently released just after Martha Stewart's prison stint and inevitable house arrest, which was all over the news. So good old 2000s tabloid opportunism had something to play in the success of Disturbia as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's directly from the screenwriter. He actually said, it's like, yeah, I was
there's
looking
a
thing
Martha
in the coverage.
There's a Martha Stewart shout out in the movie.
There's a reference. I caught that reference.
And
yeah.
I was just
yeah.
like, and it made me pause for a moment. And I was just like, when did this, like, how old is this fucking movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, LaBeouf's character, Kale, is under house arrest in the film. One of the troubled teens that were all over late 90s, early 2000s talk shows. And the sensationalized news story providing an unlikely protagonist that's a far cry from the 50s handicapped but still successful white dude, a struggling 80s actor, and edgy 90s Bart Simpson.
We get a lot of different takes with this story. It's
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, yeah,
I actually
absolutely.
Quite like it. Yeah.
What's the next one? I wonder what the next one's going to be.
Ooh, we're due. We're due no, for...
Yeah, we're right? due for a new one. Yeah.
But again, discussion, baby. Discussion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. We'll wait. So legally, this film was kind of a mess because the estate for Woolrich, in which Rear Window was based, sued DreamWorks since they believed the story was a complete ripoff of the original work rather than Hitchcock's take. The judge ruled in favor of DreamWorks, making this legally the most distinguished version of the tale from the original work, even if, like, not really. This was also a very good summer for star LaBeouf, who followed up this critically and commercially successful film with a little movie from Phil's friend, Michael Bay. It's called Transformers.
Best friend.
Just a few months later, which was, of course, a huge fucking hit. It made nerds cool. Mm-hmm, and helped usher in a new era for box office blockbusters. Needless to say, the 2000s were an exciting time. And, of course, speaking of reception and box office numbers... Phil?
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, cool. I just want to go ahead and correct you a little bit. Phil's best friend, Michael Bay. Yeah. We're BFFs.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, he was telling me all about it back then, too. It was crazy. Yeah, he was really excited.
Yeah, it sounds like a good tale that you personally heard, yeah. For sure. That actually happened.
And then everyone clapped. Mm-hmm.
So, well-received, to say the least, is the title here. So, with four standalone stories that all share the same DNA, fans have had a lot to chew on in the rare Windowverse, as we're calling it here.
Rear Windowverse?
The rear Windowverse. But how do they compare when we crunch the numbers? Well, that's why we have Letterboxd and Box Office to work with, baby. Some good old... we're going to crunch some fucking numbers, and we're going to read some Letterboxd reviews, right? So, in terms of the biggest box office success, the winner of all four adaptations is actually Disturbia, with $118 million in earnings.
Disturbia!
Yeah. Oh, you know what? It was a matter of time until one of us fucking brought up the Rihanna song.
I was holding it in for a while, but...
Did she do it for the movie? Was this for the soundtrack? So.
No. Disturbia didn't come out until, 2008.
Okay.
No, the song. Sure.
Okay, yeah.
The song... Let's see.
Pull that shit up, Jamie.
Yeah. I know. Let's see.
I gotta know now.
Yeah, I was right. Yeah. 2008. Damn, I'm good.
Look at your reaction.
And Disturbia was what? Loved,
05?
Disturbia was 2007.
2007,
year.
Okay.
Yeah, a year
earlier. Okay, nice, cool. All right, so the original Rare Window comes close when adjusted for inflation, seeing as its original $37 million at the box office translates to $105 million in good old 2013 dollars, or 2023 dollars.
What is it with you and dates right now, dude?
I'm messing up the dates today, yeah. I've been alive
week,
too long.
Because you mean last week.
I know, last week. Last week on our Blade 2, while recording Blade 2, I messed up the... that was last week.
Definitely a week ago.
Yeah, totally last week. That's how podcasts run.
Yeah, not an hour ago, a week ago. So, but when we apply the same rules to Disturbia, it's not even close. So that's because $173 million in 2023 dollars. So, yeah. Body Double was a notorious box office flop, only making $8 million on $10 million budget. The script says it's a $10 budget.
It's a cheap fucking movie.
So, sorry, Brian De Palma. This is true. This is a big flop. I do remember reading on that.
Should have bought a sandwich with that $10, buddy.
And of course, since The Simpsons is an outlier here, we can just record its ratings at the time. So Bart of Darkness got an 8.9, which means almost 9 million people watched the episode when it premiered Sunday night on Fox on September 14th, 1994.
September 4th.
September 4th.
You're just adding ones, buddy.
I'm terrible. I'm terrible now. That was the first time The Simpsons aired on Sundays, and the ratings were so good that it has stayed in the time slot since. Way to go, Springfield.
Hey.
So, really, since then? Okay.
Since this episode, yeah. The ratings were so good, they're like, we're not moving it from Sundays. It used to premiere on Thursdays at 8. That was the time slot before. Yeah.
All right, cool. So, but when it comes to critic scores, though, where do we lie? Well, this is where the OG comes out on top. But of all adaptations have major praise across
the board?
All of the adaptations have major praise across the board. The original Rare Window has a whopping 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, trailed by Body Double with a 78 and Disturbia with a 70%. Okay. All right.
I agree with those rankings.
I'd probably give Body Double like an 85, maybe. Yeah,
interesting.
Anyway, I really love Body Double. Body Double
is
fucking
a good movie. I agree.
Audiences were slightly less enthused with both Rare Window and body double, but rated Disturbia higher than critics. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Disturbia definitely falls into cult classic territory when it comes to like audience scores.
Okay, for sure. Of course, Bart of Darkness doesn't have any numbers to back it up, but from the reviews of publications online, there are literally zero negative ones. And season six itself is one of the most critically acclaimed seasons in the entire Simpsons series. So it did pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, yeah.
I really love that episode. This thought just came across right now. You know how like our friends and I, we all like to talk about like Simpsons tattoos.
Yes.
There's one that I would like to get probably like, you know, this year. But there's another one that I'm kind of thinking about, and it's actually from this episode.
Oh.
It's Martin standing butt naked in his broken pool.
The broken pool.
That would be a great Simpsons tattoo. That'd be a great Simpsons tattoo.
Oh, with the sun setting right there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I love it.
So, with all that being said, how do the fans feel about each of our adaptations? So, let's break them down, yeah? So, Rear Window has an astonishing 4.4 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd out of 43,000 reviews. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty high or no?
That's pretty
43,000. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And in second place comes Body Double with a 3.7 rating out of 12,000 reviews. And third is once again Disturbia with a 3.1 rating out of 7.4K reviews. Bart of Darkness is not, however, on Letterboxd, but if we adjust the IMDb numbers to fit the scale, it would have a 4.3 out of 5 rating. Out of 3.7K reviews.
I love that you converted the numbers for Bart of Darkness.
I had to.
You were just That's so really committed cool. to the bit.
Yeah. I love that.
To make sure they all line up. But it's an asterisk. It's on the side. It doesn't quite count. It's a different audience, you know?
Sure.
Great job on that, Fwinster.
Thank you.
He did the math.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Solid numbers across the board, right? But let's have some fun with this one and see what audience have to say about each one. Fwinster, take us to Rear Window, please.
All right, I'm going to give us each one positive and one negative review. Mm. So Patrick Willems gives the Rear Window 5 stars, saying, "The universal dilemma. What if the most beautiful person in the world wants to sleep with you, but you really just want to spy on your neighbors?"
Dude, Grace Kelly is so fucking pretty.
She's gorgeous.
She's
gorgeous.
Yeah. And apparently on the set, she was so beautiful, everybody was just like in awe when she would appear like on the set.
Yeah, I can imagine.
She's Grace motherfucking Kelly.
She's royalty, right?
I can't remember. No, I'm not sure. I don't know. She should be. Look at her. She's fucking... I mean, yeah. Look it up. Somebody look it up.
I swear she comes from royalty, if I remember from the college course that I've taken from reviewing Window.
We'll find out. I'm with it.
Patrick Willems is great, though. Do you guys keep up on his YouTube channel? I really love his channel.
No, I know you
He's had a couple of reviews. He's actually one of my favorite movie YouTubers.
Oh, cool.
I'll send you some videos after.
Send some.
Yeah,
she's an American actress who became the Princess of Monaco.
There you go.
Shit. She should be, dude. She's a goddamn princess of my heart. So for our negative review, Peckledon gives the film half a star, saying, quote, "So unbelievably ass and boring. Apologies to Brian De Palma."
Wow.
I know.
Okay.
Fucking lame ass.
All right, Peckledon, you obviously just want attention. Stop it.
I agree with your stupid-ass name, dude.
I got a Peckledon for you right here,
Peckledon. There you go. That's right there. just got a tiny Hitchcock, dude.
Oh my god.
So Body Double time, Phil. What do they say about Body Double?
All right, here's the positive review for Body Double, and it goes like this. Movie Genius says in their 4-star review, quote, "Fuck you, purist. This is better than Hitchcock."
Wow.
That's fighting words right there.
Those are fighting words. I love Body Double, but damn, better than Rear Window?
I wouldn't say better than Rear Window, but I think it's honestly a very, very good movie.
They're
different.
I can compare Disturbia with Rear Window easily, but Body Double and Rear Window, I can't, because Body Double's... there's homages, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Disturbia just kind of seems like the silent, low tier remake.
Okay. Right? It's okay. More, okay.
It's okay. Right? We'll get to it. It's a more direct remake, I would say.
Okay.
Body Double uses a lot of elements from Rear Window.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, but we'll get to that. All right, so here's the negative review for Body Double. I'm Marty, You're Not gives the film half stars, a half a star, saying, quote, Jake Scully is an annoying pussy, and I'm glad he got cucked.
Jesus Christ.
Jake is not my favorite protagonist of all
time.
No,
dude. Yeah. He's just like beta Bill Maher. Like, he's
wow, that's really well put. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like him.
Yeah. Oh, God. Webster, please take me to Disturbia.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just reading about Grace Kelly being the Princess of Monaco. That's wild shit.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
She retired at 26 to become a princess.
Jesus Christ.
That's wild. Anyway, let's talk about Disturbia. We have our positive review. Silent J gives the film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, a pretty accurate documentary about the life of Sam Witwicky during the 2020 COVID quarantine.
Wow.
Oh,
a life without it. Optimus Prime. Sam Witwicky's just like, no.
The negative review, reviewer Sydney gives the film 1.5 stars, saying, quote, would rather be murdered by the serial killer than make out with a kid named Kale who spies on me 24/7.
All right, Sid.
I thought his name was pretty hilarious. He was like,
fucking Kale. Yeah. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Do you want me to take this?
Take it.
So, Rear Window is clearly one of the most influential films ever made, and we likely have not seen the end of this story. It's been adapted a lot, with even more adaptations we didn't cover here. So there's a reason why the original film has been preserved by the Library of Congress, but what about our thoughts? Because it's our podcast.
That's fucking right, baby.
Discussion time. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Hey. Wow, we covered fucking a lot of movies right there.
That was a lot.
Yeah, we did.
In an hour.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah, man, we got to talk about each of them for just a little bit. So, let's go with the OG. Let's do the OG. So, what are you guys' thoughts on Rear Window with rating? We're going to rate him right away.
Okay. All right. If you permit me, I fucking love this movie.
You're permitted.
Thank you.
Didn't even wait for us to confirm it either, dude.
No, this movie is pristine. It's actually my favorite Hitchcock flick, to be honest. It's between this or Psycho. Dial M for Murder fucks also. But... Mm-hmm. Rear Window's one I think I've seen most, and I think I've seen it more than I've seen it, that I've seen Psycho. But this movie is like one of my favorite thrillers. It's like Hitchcock does this thing where like he gets me super emotionally invested. Mm-hmm. Like I'm at the edge of my seat because of all the cheese man that's going on, just like how Jimmy Stewart is. Mm-hmm. Like I get a rise out of it just the way his character does, you know? Because I'm just like, oh, first time watching it, I was like, ooh, who is this? Like, oh, Miss Torso is kind of hot. But then I'm like, damn, dude, what's the story with like with Miss Lonely Hearts? Like, dude, these are all short films inside a bigger film, like you know the story of what's going on because you're following along Jimmy Stewart, you know, like at each window I think represents a short film.
And I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I love it. This is a high one for me, man. I'm going 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm with it. Webster, you want to go or should I take it?
I absolutely can. I fucking loved this movie. I watched it this morning. Okay, so I'm going to a peek behind
the
curtain.
For the first time?
Yes, first time ever this morning.
Oh, your first time was this morning? Oh, yes. Shit. Mm.
Yes. I'm going to peek behind the curtain here for a moment. I planned on putting it on while I was doing other things. And I got immediately sucked in.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad that happened to you. Because first, you should not do that. You should not put stuff like that in the back while you do laundry or whatever. So I'm glad the movie did this to you. Good. You deserve it.
Okay, jeez. So, God. No.
I'm glad Hitchcock got your attention.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
The Hitchcock grabbed her.
Oh, God.
She was pulled in by the Hitchcock.
Please stop.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So... God damn it. No, so I was immediately sucked into the movie, and like I basically like sat on the edge of my couch the entire time. I think at one point I got up to like get breakfast and I was like, what the fuck did I miss? What did I miss? And I had to rewind. And I did not miss a single second of this movie. So fucking good. It's like, it's 1950s like movie length. Like it's a little bit longer, but like, that's fine. I didn't feel it too bad with this one, honestly. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. I really fucking like this movie. I think maybe, I'm trying to think. I mean, I like Psycho more. Psycho is my favorite for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But this was probably like a close second. But I don't know. I like a lot of Hitchcock stuff. I really, really, really like. Yeah.
He's a good director. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
love it.
Yeah, to me, this is a classic. I can see why it's been adapted so much. It almost feels like an Americana, like a legend, like, ooh, you know, like, yeah, an urban legend kind of thing.
Yeah,
just done so amazingly, but also within its era. This is like a peek into what the 50s may have felt like and what adults in the 50s were probably thinking, you know, with Jimmy Stewart being like a little like kind of curmudgeon here and there, not really getting with the times, but still, you know, and then everybody else having their own issues as single people, as married people, as families during a heat wave. Like there's a slice of life aspect to it with this very tense mystery. And yeah, that's hard to do.
But then you have moments of levity. There's a fucking couple that sleeps on their fire escape.
On the fire escape, yeah. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and it's just little things like that. I would say, yeah, the length is the only thing to me that kind of gets me a little bit, because it does kind of meander a little bit. But it's not that I'm bored. It just is a time investment.
Also, the 50s feminism was a little, like, I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying, though. This was totally of its time. Like, if you want to see where the first, like, kind of cynicism started there, a little bit like, oh, you gotta call them like this now. Like, it's, yeah.
Grace Kelly was just like, no self-respecting woman would go anywhere without makeup and jewelry. And I was just like, what the fuck is she talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Watch it, princess. No. No, this is, to me, it's a great film. It's one of the great movies out there. I can see why it's so influential. And obviously, it's going to keep being remade again and again and again, totally understandable. So this is, I was going to say 4.5, but I think this might be a 5, actually. 4.75. I'm going to go split the difference in there. Mm-hmm. It's almost there. Oh, it'll just be a little shorter, tiny shorter. So, yeah.
This might be like, what was I going to say? The one with Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper, A Star Is Born, where it gets remade like every like 30 years or something like that?
Yeah, I can see that being the case with this for sure. Also, I still say Psycho's above it for me. But this is definitely second. Like, solid second place for me.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And this one's for me and you, Phil. So what did you think of Body Double, and how would you rate it, baby?
Yeah, no, I love the fuck out of this movie. I wouldn't say it's my favorite Brian De Palma film. I saw Blowout and pretty recently as well. I want to say within like the last like 3 years. So like probably since I think it was 2020 when I first saw Blowout with John Travolta. And but Body Double I saw this year, and I know after Body Double, I think I've seen every De Palma film there is. I think I might be missing maybe one or so, but like, I know De Palma is like also like the like a master of suspense, also. Not like, I wouldn't call him the master of suspense, because that's obviously the Hitchcock has that title, right? But De Palma also, like, dude, just watch Carrie. You know,
yes.
Look what he did with Carrie, and like, look at movies like also like Carlito's Way. The dude has done, he's delivered, dude, even the first Mission Impossible movie. Brian De Palma is like, he gave us that, you want to talk thriller and suspense? He gave us the Tom Cruise hanging by a thing and the, you know, touch the floor, the alarm's going to go off, but then like close up on the sweat that's coming from his forehead. And then, you know, like he gave us that iconic Mission Impossible scene right there. Like the dude knows how to, like, the dude really knows how to create tension, you know? And he did it exquisitely here with Body Double as well. You definitely see the nods to Rear Window for sure, especially when Jake is looking through the telescope and he finds like, and he's like, we're looking through his POV and to like big windows and stuff like that. And also like in the scene where I think he's going into a big mall. I think, is it the Century City Mall back in the 80s?
It kind of looks like it, dude. Yeah. I think so.
Of the
same
80s?
Parking lot and everything. Yeah.
That's why I was like, dude, I go there all the time to go to the AMC. And
1984 so, like, version of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The 84 version of the Century City Mall. And so like, you see like all the suspense going on right there, like following people, you know, diving into people's lives, spying on people's lives and stuff like that. All those themes are definitely found. All the themes that are in Rear Window are definitely evident here in Body Double. And this movie is incredible. I loved it. Mm-hmm. It's also fun, too, because there are some, like, moments where it's just like, what? But, but I love it. I highly recommend it to anybody, as we've been recommending Webster this whole episode. But, yeah, at the end of the day, I'm going to go with a 3.85 out of 5 for Body Double.
Okay. I respect that tremendously. Yeah. I'm with you, like, pretty much everything you said right there. I would say my favorite thing about this movie is just how it really intersects Hollywood with Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a really, really, like, good parallel there. Because, you know, there's the Rear Window aspect of it, which dominates the first part of the film until, like, you know, the inciting incident happens. And then it becomes, like, another type of mystery. But mm-hmm. also, you know, when you understand what's going on, there's definitely still acting. There's still, like, a mm-hmm. play. It's still theatrical. That's central to the mystery itself, which is crazy to me, because that's hard to do. It becomes a little convoluted, obviously, but that's just because, you know, it's a very convoluted story. Also, stylistically, it's amazing, because, like, dude, the sound itself is very diegetic with the, like, the sweeping, like, violins and, like, fluffy mm-hmm. music that you would get. It feels very Hitchcockian, like, mm-hmm. almost too Hitchcockian in the beginning, with, like, some hints of Lynch. Yeah. There's, like, especially with, like, the Native American and all that, like, it feels almost like Mulholland Drive-y before Mulholland Drive. But the movie breaks when it has the Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood scene.
Yep.
Right in the middle, exactly, and it's like a scene within a scene, and it's just mm-hmm. De Palma just fucks the audience right there.
Is this
and
the same movie?
yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is a whole way different now. But it, mm-hmm. like, it was fucking amazing. And then I think after that the movie changes, but not worse. Like, it is, it just becomes more of a De Palma movie than a Hitchcock mm-hmm. movie.
You were talking about his style. I mean, just look at his camera work and the themes of claustrophobia. Do you remember, like, no spoilers here, but remember this tunnel scene by the beach?
Yeah,
when the guy gets away and the camera like zooms in.
I was fucking tense.
And then like mm-hmm. the panic attacks. Whenever he'd have like a panic attack, you would tell like De Palma does this thing like, okay, if he's gonna have a panic attack, we are all gonna have a panic attack we're gonna show it with the camera movement. We're gonna show it with like music. So the whole audience is gonna have a panic attack too because he's having it because we're following him. We're kind of seeing everything through his POV. And I just thought it was brilliant. Brilliant choices were made.
Yeah. I agree. It's definitely, to me, the most artsy take on the Rear Window mm-hmm. story so mm-hmm. far. I'm going to give it a solid, 3.75 for me. 3.75. They're both right at the cusp of, like, the top tier ratings right there. But yeah, mm-hmm. 3.75. It is a little convoluted. That's maybe what kind of gets it. And it is kind of long, too. Mm-hmm. But stylistically, I think it's a fantastic film. I really, really like it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Ooh, but we got the big dog, Disturbia. You ready, Webster? Oh, there she is. All right, what do you guys think of Disturbia?
I mean, I'll go later. Someone else go.
Okay.
I can go. Okay. You guys have just been talking a lot, so I can. Yeah. I can go. I fucking love this movie. It's like this was like one of the movies that I saw before I really got into horror. And I remember being absolutely, like, I thought this movie was so fucking scary. And then I rewatched it, and I was just like, this movie's so cute.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
And, I mean, I watched it around, like, maybe, like, a couple years after it came out. So I had to have been 10, 11. I just thought it was so spooky. And I was just like, and it, yeah, it now it's just fun. It's just I think it's very like it's very early 2000s. It does give that like right around the same time as Transformers vibe. Mm-hmm. Only this one has a little bit more like comedic elements. The girl next door thing. I mean, you get that too, kind of with Megan Fox, but she's Megan Fox, right?
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. It. I don't know. It feels like very comforting to me almost.
Right? I agree. There's definitely a comfort aspect to it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. What would you rate it, Webster?
I'd give it probably like a 3 out of 5.
Nice.
Yeah. I think there's some rewatchability. Maybe 2.5 out of 5. There's definitely like a straight down the middle. Like there's, I'm not sure about the rewatchability aspect for me. But when I do probably get the chance to sit down and watch it again, like I'll watch it and be happy.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I'll go ahead also. This is a totally nostalgia play for me. I saw it in theaters during the Season of LeBeuf, and I'm gonna say like it's such a solid, well-paced, fun take on this story, and it's not necessarily deep. It's not a deep movie at all, but it doesn't really have to be. Like it's surface level fun. It's so comforting. I think comforting is the great way to put it. Shia LaBeouf has a great performance in this movie. His friend's a little fucking annoying, but it's fine. Right? And the mystery is pretty basic, but it's not necessarily about the mystery. It's kind of about the characters, and the characters interact really, really well. I think the house arrest is a good angle on the same kind of story, and especially having like a traumatic situation to start it off. Like, you know, the movie really commits to itself, and its absurdities are kind of a result of that, but they work. So to me it's one of them cheeseburger movies we always talk about. You know? It's not deep.
Yeah.
It's not a fucking steak, but you know, it's a pretty good cheeseburger. Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna give this a solid 3. It's a 3 for me. Yeah. Like, I really enjoy it. It's a nostalgia play. I would definitely say it's above average, and I can see why it's a successful take. Probably the most successful take on this story compared to general audiences. So, Disturbia for me. You can get a big old thumbs up, baby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also, I think you guys pretty much just said everything I'm about to say right now. So, like, without regurgitating, I'm just going to be like, yo, this movie's fun. I saw it for the first time last night. I do remember seeing the trailers for it all the time. Like, this is just one that I just went to go see in theaters or anything like that. I never saw it. But it was cool. It was fun. You know, I don't think it's one of those movies I'm going to come back to or be like, oh, fuck, it blew me away. Even if I had never even seen Rare Window, like, I would be like, all right, this is still a cool movie, like, cool concept. And, I think it was just kind of too clean, too polished. Like, it's
very polished.
Like, it's super polished. Like, it's like, you know, it's DreamWorks, by the way, you know. So DreamWorks also had already worked with Steven Spielberg, you know. They're not gonna make a total gritty take on Rear Window or anything like that, you know. So but this movie was fun. It was cool. It's very outdated for sure. Like, it's like, man, like, it's not, and I'm not just talking about, like, the iTunes thing or the Xbox 360 thing or anything like that. I'm just like, it just feels like it was made for, it feels like it's definitely a product of its time, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but it was fine. It was a cool movie. It's not like something that's the, you know, I'm also going to be going, I guess, 2.85
out of 5. I love it.
It was cool. It was fun.
Yeah, I would say you're right. It does feel of its era, though. Like, they're not, they wouldn't make a movie like this nowadays. Like, just from the pacing to, like, the, you know, the lack of cynicism, really. Like, it just, there's a heart to it that I think is absent from a lot of movies. And it's in the horror remake era, you know?
If I can make a major critique here is the girl. She was, like, a terrible actress.
Oh, yeah, she sucked.
She's not that great, no.
Yeah, she was bad. No, I would have loved to see the dude be like the femme fatale. Like, have a little gayness right there, make it interesting. Yeah, I'm like, that dude was a way better actor than the girl. What was his name? Ronnie? Awesome.
Yeah. Ronnie, yeah.
The scene where the neighbor gets into her car and like she's supposed to be like terrified. I'm like, what's going on here, girl?
I know, yeah. I was like, well, yeah. She's very stale.
Imagine Jimmy Stewart in that fucking spot right there.
may I say, why are you getting into my car now? I didn't give you permission to. Or maybe he's the killer. What if Jimmy Stewart was the neighbor? He's like, no, the little girl, I'm about to say, I don't like appreciate you spying on me all the time. You know, I'm a friendly person if you get to know me. As he touches her hair.
Yeah, okay, that made that very dark with Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy. Better a nameless actor. Okay, and then just real quick thoughts on Bart of Darkness. I mean, to me, it's just an example of the great things that Simpsons does. Perfectly self-referential with its humor, great take on a Hitchcock story. It's even animated very Hitchcock-like. Like, with Bart and Lisa talking in a dark room and actually having shadows, and, like, cinematography is, like, kind of spot on. Martin just looking at a sunset being naked as fuck. Like, little things like that. It's clearly one of the more polished episodes, but they usually go out for the premieres. To me, this is how you do a riff on the story while still making it your own. And it isn't obviously when they were in peak form. So yeah, Bart Darkness to me, this is like a solid 4. Like, it's just a great episode of
The Simpsons. I love this episode. Yeah, I think so too. I totally agree with you on that one. 100%. This is one of those episodes where it's like, oh, I remember this one.
Yeah,
it still holds up. It's really well written, dude. With the earlier in the episode, you mentioned how this episode has kind of takes a few jabs at religion, how it's like judgmental. Maude literally says that. I went to Bible camp to be judgmental.
To be more judgmental. Yeah.
To be more judgmental. Like, dude, the writing on this is like, it's really well written. It's 90s peak Simpsons, you know?
Yeah, with Screaming Flanders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. That shit was crazy. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, very reverent. What would you rate it?
Also 4. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's like the greatest episode of all time, but it's a fucking good episode.
It's a banger. I agree. Mm-hmm. Now the fun stuff we were waiting for. Mm-hmm. What would a modern retelling of this story look like? And who would you want to direct it?
Damn. Jeez.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. God dang it. I need a minute here. Damn.
I know. This is a tough one. I mean, I don't think a broken leg would be it. Oh, maybe during quarantine.
I was thinking quarantine, but I feel like that's the easy out.
Yeah, you're right.
That would have been easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, bring back a broken leg. I mean, if we're going to go for a full-on remake, unlike Disturbia, it's like, oh, this is not a remake, but it kind of is. Legal issues. Mm-hmm. But like, if we had the legal right to remake Rear Window in 2023, mm-hmm. I would bring back the broken leg. And let's have
Let's have it for like a dumb reason. He's just like, he went hard in the mosh pit too much and just like, ah! Like, and that was it.
That's good.
Something stupid, you know?
Yeah. I was gonna say like he went hiking and stuff like that, but yeah, I think a mosh pit would be cool.
Oh, trying to do some Instagrammable shit.
He's an influencer.
Yeah, he's an outdoor influencer too, who's used to getting their what do you call? I forgot the word. But yeah, I like it. An outdoor influencer that's now indoors.
Well, you know what? All right, how about this? I'm going to go with this. An Instagram influencer played by Sydney Sweeney.
Okay.
Breaks her leg while doing some Instagrammable shit. Mm-hmm. This movie is going to be directed by... Damn, I'm thinking. Who can direct this? Sydney Sweeney, Rare Window... Because I think the influencer's got to be really pretty. She's got to be, like, also got... She's got to have some acting chops. Let's see. Damn, dude. I cannot think of a good director that could do a Rare Window right now.
I can't think of
a good
one either. Like,
who like, would... let's see.
It's got to be, like, a younger dude, though. Or,
I know. Somebody...
Whoever did a fucking
like I don't like I don't.
Hmm.
Oh, the guys that did the two directors.
Oh, those the brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a fun little take on it, or like you know, like a Greta Gerwig. Give her a little shot at this.
Yeah, or
Greta
maybe,
Gerwig's horror.
She's already done a bunch of other fucking dramas.
Mm-hmm. Even a Jordan Peele would be not bad either. But
yeah.
A Jordan Peele wouldn't be a bad idea to have this right here. You know what, dude?
I feel like a lot of the film would be told through, like, her phone, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It would be a big thing on her phone.
I like the idea of making the main character a woman, because in all the remakes that we've done, the main character is a man. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I like
you know, if, like, if we want to go full-on remake, I think David Fincher would probably be the best director for this.
Oh, he'd be a fantastic take on it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know he's not young, but he's still collecting, he's still making bangers, and he's got a new one coming out, The Killer, this year.
Oh.
Ooh.
I think if David Fincher, I think if David Fincher were to do something, bring back, like, you know, Seven. Like, but then again, he's been doing great thrillers and, like Zodiac, like, Manhunter, and, like, even his new stuff, like, Manhunter is, like, fucking going off. And, like, yeah, dude.
What about Edgar Wright?
That would be a little bit more comedic, but...
Like, yeah, give us some style, though.
I liked visually. I thought Last Night in Soho was cool, but I just thought that movie was lacking hard. Though I was mildly disappointed with when he did Last Night in Soho, because I'm thinking like that could probably be like his thriller. That tone mm-hmm. he would probably.
But that's too original. Well, that's too original. This is a very established story. He also he can work with it.
A lot of tension with Baby Driver, and he did that well.
Yeah, true.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna take the David Fincher train. I'm gonna say, and also because it made me think of Zodiac, Robert Downey Jr., David Fincher. Robert Downey Jr. is a like super like it's like because he's you know now that he's a, like a little bit older, like and it's not quite Tony Stark, but bear with me here, like a super super rich guy in like this huge mansion, and like basically he's like a recluse. And so he's not necessarily injured, but he, like, starts spying on, or, like basically spying in, like, the neighbors and, like, what's around him. However, I think the catch is that he thinks he witnesses a murder, but he really doesn't. And it's just him. And it's just, like, a descent into, like, him being so convinced that there was a murder. And everyone's just like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Hold love on this. Too. I'm gonna combine your ideas here, because I think Sydney Sweeney influenced her things perfect, right?
Yeah, I do like that.
But I think she's gonna live in one of these affluent ass neighborhoods, and she's gonna think the murderer is gonna be that RDJ neighbor. That's a famous actor that she secretly thinks is a killer and is trying to get these leads on her IG or on her TikTok.
Take it
and get people to like buy into this tale.
Oh my God, take it one step further. They both think the other person's the murderer.
Yes.
Oh. Oh.
And they're using their biases from their respective reasons they got fame to be like, yeah, why?
I can see like class tensions. Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that's a good take on
it.
Okay.
That's good.
All right, look at us.
Look at us workshopping.
Yeah, I know, right?
Hey, the influencer, how she got famous, she thinks the seasoned actor is also the murderer, and the seasoned actor is like, this bitch is... Now she's home? Because she's never home. Yeah, all right, good. I'm with it.
I love that.
All right, and before we wrap up, guys, pick a number between 1 and 3.
2.
Okay. 3.
Okay, wow, I'm 1. All right. Guys... I broke my leg. No, I don't know. I don't know why. I am going to be the protagonist that is, for some reason, confined to a location. Number two, you're the damsel in distress. So how are you going to play into a plot? Because number three is our nefarious neighbor.
Oh, wow. Hell yeah, that's me.
So I got to figure out why I'm isolated. Phil, what are you hiding? And of course, Alex, how do we get this bitch? So, for me, I got ran over again in Koreatown. And this time, longer recovery period. I'm still going to be okay, but man, am I struggling. To the point where, I'm staying at a friend's house because it's just too goddamn hot in my apartment. And, of course, my friend is going on vacation, so there I am. And my friend happens to live next to Webster.
Hell yeah.
Also, that's why I'm isolated. I'm recovering for at least, a couple months there. But I noticed some weird shit happening out the window. Phil, what kind of weird shit are we accusing you of?
Okay, So, it actually, instead of a murder, I'm actually the leader of a cult.
Ooh!
I invite whole bunch of people to come over for,
activities.
Yoga. Quote-unquote yoga. Right? But no, dude, we're totally doing human sacrifices where we bring in an innocent girl who's been missing from a nightclub, you know, kind of like in Disturbia.
Oh, shit.
And we have her, dude. And we're in my tiny little living room apartment doing human sacrifices. You know, you think, you know, that's what we're really doing. You're seeing some sketchy stuff going on as far as, like, a woman running for her life. And then you see some dude with a weird mask, like a Bray Wyatt-looking dude, just, like, snatch her away from the window. And you're like, whoa, what's going on? And then, like, you know, I'm just like, hey, hi, you're Anthony, right? You're currently staying at the apartment. You injured yourself, right? Oh, okay.
Oh, hey, yeah, well, I spent a lot of time at, like, the window.
Hey, well, we do recreational yoga here at my apartment. You're always welcome to join us anytime you want.
And oh, I can't. Sure. I'm supposed to be bedridden, you know? Otherwise, I would totally do it. I would totally do it with a friend who might be interested.
But you have, but you and, you know what? You and Webster. You actually have the physical looks of our pagan god from our scriptures, and you're just like, oh, dude, these are the human embodiments. These are the resurrected figures that we've been praising this whole time. We need to sacrifice these two. So me and my cult followers, we break into the apartment and try to snatch you in and stuff like that. But you know, you got to call the cops and stuff like that and stop this.
Well, there you go. That's up to Webster, though. How do we get this bitch?
Yeah.
I think I would be, like, the willing homebody, like, tech nerd.
Okay.
And,
I like it. And it helped me with the sleuthing, because I'm a bitch when it comes to sleuthing.
Precisely. And, like, kind of playing into the cult thing, just, like, being like, oh my gosh, this sounds so interesting, so I could sneak into Phil's house and, like, plant cameras and shit.
Okay.
And then, and then talking my way out of it, and then just, like, at the midpoint of the movie, the conflict is just like, this is too intense, man, I'm out of here. But then, you know.
But because you looked like the other pagan god, that's when Phil gets you.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's when Phil gets you. Yeah. Then I gotta get you, but I fall into his trap. And then he went.
And then he went. And then it's the bad ending.
Yeah.
I think I have a panic button somewhere for...
No, like, you know, my physical therapist is looking for me.
Yeah.
And she heard about this shit. And that's it. Completely random character just somehow saves the fucking day.
That's so stupid.
We are helpless.
That is
we
so
We are so
stupid.
Helpless and dumb.
Oh, man.
I think we did it, guys. Wonderful. I think we made our own take, a horrible take.
The one with Sydney Sweeney and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, I think that's more clever. But they're real actors, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Ours just turned into, like, a documentary on Investigation Discovery real quick.
It's why we all suck.
All right, guys. Let's call it here. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us on our journey through Rear Window and all of the, all the pieces of media that it inspired. We're done with September. Holy shit.
Nice.
Spooky season is kicking off with a bang next week. Very excited for all of that. Please stay tuned for that. We have a super fun October lineup. Just dedicated to spooky season, because that's what we're all about here. So, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please make sure you are subscribed and rating us on either iTunes or Spotify. It helps us a shit ton, and it does help other people find the podcast. Thank you so much for doing that. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. And we are on Instagram, mostly, at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. You can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
And peeking through his window through a telescope. You can also find Phil doing that. Absolutely find him.
I've seen those cameras you have, Phil. I know what you do.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's just lots of big zoom lens right there.
That's why I keep the zoom lenses, baby.
Okay. And then if you want to stay up to date on all of the network shenanigans, we have so many awesome podcasts here on the network. We're at 4 and growing. So if you want to stay up to date on that, you can find us on Instagram at Horrible Peoples Network, which is HORRORBLE Peoples Network. And if you are in... if you are in SoCal, specifically like the LA OC area, this weekend we will be at HorrorCon LA. If you want to come check us out, we're very excited. This is our first time ever tabling somewhere. We're very nervous, but it's going to be awesome. So if you're going to be in the LA area, go check out HorrorCon LA. We will be tabling there. So yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And if you break your leg, just... watch a lot of YouTube. You don't, you're like, your neighbors aren't that interesting. As the naked neighbor, we're not that interesting.
Yeah, unless your mom cancels the Xbox.
Oh, sorry, no, bro. Not sorry, Xbox bro. Live. Sorry, bro. All right, bye.
Bye. See later. Yay.